to call the meeting to order. So it's Thursday, May 9th, 2019, and the time is 1 p.m. So call this meeting of the Prepaid Funeral Guarantee Fund Advisory Council to order pursuant to Section 551 of the Government Code and 154.355 of the Texas Finance Code. So we have in attendance Wallace Jones, Amy Biggs, and Rebecca Motley, and they are attending via telephone, so on a conference call. So there is a quorum with three members present today. So the first thing will be the minutes. Does everybody have the opportunity to read the minutes?
Yes.
Yes.
Before I call for a motion to approve any addition, changes, additions?
No, sir.
Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of May 17, 2018, Prepaid Funeral Guarantee Fund Advisory Council meeting?
So moved.
Moved by Wallace. Did I hear a second?
I second.
Thank you, Rebecca. Okay. Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. So now we're going to have the discussion and possible vote to approve the activity of the funds and the investment officer report from March 1, 2018 to February 2019. Jesse?
Yes, hi, Jesse Salcia here, Department of Banking. So I'm gonna go over the activity for both the trust funded and insurance funded accounts, again, from March 1st, 2018 through February 28, 2019. Just the guarantee funds are administered in accordance with subchapter H of chapter 154 of the Finance Code and chapter 25 of the Texas Administrative Code. Pages 3 through 8 are the trust funded activity. And you will notice that I, starting with page 4 through 8, those are the quarterly reports that we produce. On page 3, that's the overall activity for the 12 months. And everything on the right-hand side of the bar there, shaded gray bar, is funds associated with seized funds and restitution payable. Everything on the left-hand side of that bar is guarantee fund activity. So what I will talk to you about on the left-hand side, that is, there are four items there, items 11, 13, 21, and 27. Item 11 is a travel reimbursement that was paid out. And items 13, 21, and 27 are guarantee fund claims that will be further discussed by Russell Reese later in the agenda. The things that I will highlight, some things on the right hand side of that bar there, are item number 2, which is restitution that we received from Tim Gaffney. And also there's several items in there, items 12, 20, 26, and 28. There were actually payments out of that same, out of the funds that Mr. Gaffney paid. Those are most of the activity we consider normal. And the other thing that I will highlight also is item number 23, which you'll see it's an amount of $528,629.86. That is related to an order we did or restitution that was collected from Austin Peel and Son. And that matter will be discussed later in this packet as well. But I just wanted to point out that we did collect that at the end of February, and we'll talk about a little bit more, but that will be, it's gonna be dispersed. We're in the process of dispersing that to consumers as required. So I will go on to page 5, 6, 7, and 8. Again, those are the quarterly reports. I will spend a little bit of time on page 8, which is the last quarter of this period. You will notice that it reflects the ending balance for the trust funded guarantee fund of $1,861,565.49. There's also a breakdown of where the funds are deposited as of February 28th. Most of it is in the Texas Treasury safekeeping in overnight repurchase agreements. The remainder of the funds are in those three CDs, one with Veritex Community Bank, another State Bank of Texas, and Frontier Bank of Texas. You will see the maturity dates for the various CDs, and I will just point out that all the funds are under the $250,000 limit, which is associated with the FDIC coverage. And also, these are all state charter banks as well here in Texas. So that is concludes my coverage of.
And the rates are up a little bit.
Yes.
From last time, obviously.
That is correct, Commissioner. Yes, the rates are a little bit up, and every time we CD matures, we go out and get rates from competing funds and so forth. So that is correct. Yeah. Okay. And so that's on the trust funded activity. And then I will now go on to page 9 through 13, and this covers the insurance funded activity. As you recall, we do collect assessments up until they're $1 million, and this fund has not reached $1 million. So we do collect assessments. The two amounts there under the guarantee fund deposits are assessments we collected from insurance funded permit holders, and it's $1 per contract until it reaches $1 million, like I said. On the trust funded, you know, that's obviously reached over $1 million, so that's why there were no assessments over there. But in this particular case, this fund, we are collecting. And these are sales made through a calendar year. So for calendar year 2018, we collected approximately $72,000 in assessments compared to approximately $68,000 for calendar year 2017. So it's an average of about $70,000 a year that we collect in insurance funded assessments. And projecting this out, it'll probably be sometime about 6 years or so before the fund does reach the $1 million as that is required before we start collecting assessments, I'm sorry. Other than that, there's no normal activity there. It's just fees and interest earned. And now on page 10, 11, 12 are the quarterly reports there for those three quarters. And on page 13, this reflects the ending balance for the insurance funded account of $607,866.79. Very similar to the trust funded account. Recap, we do have where the fund is deposited at. Most of it is with the Treasury safekeeping as well and overnight repos, and a portion of it is with Access Bank here in Texas, and the rates are on the right-hand side. The reason why the rate for Access Bank is a little bit lower is because it's up for renew in a couple of months, so we will go out and hopefully get a higher rate. But we lock into it for a 12-month period, and that's why it was a little bit lower there. Does anybody have any questions for and any of the items I just covered in agenda item B?
Any questions?
I've got one.
Okay.
You probably answered it before.
Sure.
Back on page 9, you've got two different assessment amounts.
Oh, right.
But the last page, you've got the $48,840.
Yes.
Tell me again what the two different assessments are.
Sure. So what we do is we collect them per calendar year, right? And since this report actually crosses over two calendar years, the first assessment of $45,699 is part of the assessment that was collected for 2017, and the $48,840 is part of the assessment we collected in 2018. The assessments are due, the reports are due March 1st, so sometimes, depending on the timing of when we get those funds, some of them will make it before the end of February, and some of those remaining assessments will make it in March or the following month. So So this is, it's kind of, if you want to think about it, split in half, just to, simply because of the timing of the, of this report and also the timing of the deposits. Does that answer your question, Mr. Wallace?
That, I understand that.
Okay, all right.
Okay. Hearing no other questions, do I have a motion to approve the activity of the funds and investment officer report for February 28, 2019 as presented by Jesse? Anybody willing to make the motion?
Yes, sir.
Okay, is that you, Amy?
It is, yes, sir.
Okay, Amy makes a motion. Is there a second? Having a hard time hearing.
I second.
Okay, Rebecca seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you. So now we'll go to discuss and possible vote to ratify the claims related to the Tom Walker Funeral Home in Coleman.
Okay. This is Russell Reese, Director of Special Audits. On page 14 will be the first where it starts to talk about this particular claim. I would like to point out, which is good news, the ones I'm getting ready to discuss are something, are claims related to funeral homes we have previously discussed on several different previous meetings. The first one on page 14 is Tom Walker, and I will note on the memo, we actually talked about this, I believe the first meeting was back in May of 2014. Obviously, we continue to think we're done with all these claims, but people move out of, you know, of the city, and I guess and they come back years later and find out that they didn't have a prepaid funeral contract related to the funeral home has been closed, and somebody comes forward. So this one particularly is a person on Vanica Mays, M-A-V-E-S, and it relates to a $6,499 prepaid funeral contract, which that dollar amount is on page 15. Again, it's very similar. Came forward, had the documentation, which I'm getting ready to discuss, and it again, it was below the threshold that's required prior approval, but we will seek ratification at this meeting. On page 16 is the actual trust funded contract the individual purchased. Page 17 is a continuation of the prepaid funeral contract. And you will note on the bottom of that page, there's one payment for $5,746 down payment, and the remainder is due payable at need, or whenever, pretty much it says. Page 18 is showing the date signed. And you will note we take away the consumer signature for privacy. We try to red act that before we create these books. So you won't see the signatures because we took them off before we made copies. So page 18 is the conclusion of that prepaid funeral contract. Page 19 was actually show a receipt where it indicates from the funeral home that was paid in full, balance due zero back in September 6th of 2011. And then the next page on page 20 is actually the funeral home, Henderson Funeral Home, who provided the at-need services. Next page is the Henderson Funeral Home, in fact, getting a $6,499 check from the comptroller to pay to them for the restitution of that claim. And that completes that first one related to Tom Walker. Again, I'm not going to go to the specifics. Tom Walker has been discussed before, but if you have any questions related to that previous seizure, please let me know, or I'll ask right now. Any questions related to that first claim?
No.
Okay. Well, we're going to proceed to, wait for it, another claim on page 22.
I think I got a question.
Okay.
I don't know if we talked about this. So when the money, this case, the money, the $6,499 is the amount that we asked to fund the comptroller to pay directly, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, got it. Go ahead. Thank you.
Okay. The next claim starts on page 22, and again, it relates to Tom Walker Funeral Home. And this one will have a husband and wife claim, and that is on page 23. Again, very similar, same funeral, same circumstances, but we had a purchaser, Michael Nixon, who bought it for himself and his wife, and the net claim that we're seeking ratifications is $933.30 for each one, for a total of $1,866.60. This dollar amount that I'm going over, Jesse has already in the recap previously, and these correlate to those amounts. So on page 24, Michael Nixon will have a prepaid funeral contract, and you'll note he's the beneficiary for that particular one. And on page 25 is continuation of his prepaid funeral contract, and it will indicate one payment paid in full on that particular contract, and that was $1,037 on September 24th, 2009. And then the next page, 26, also Michael purchased, but the beneficiary at that time was his wife, Martha. You'll see page 27, very similar, same contract, one payment, $1,037, indicating a paid in full prepaid funeral contract. And page 28 will indicate additional documentation or receipts for those prepaid funeral contracts. Page 29 is correspondence from our special audits administrator, Becky. Pretty self-explanatory on that page. Again, that next page on page 30 is indicating a request of reimbursement to the Michael Nixon of $1,866.60. And that will conclude the Tom Walker particular claim. Does anyone have additional questions related to those before I move on to the next one?
No.
Okay, we're gonna vote on each one of them separately. So, do I hear a motion to ratify claims related to Tom G. Walker Funeral Home as presented by Russell Reese?
I move to accept.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
A second.
Okay, motion and a second. Any other questions about that? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? As carried, motion passes. Okay, go ahead, Russell.
Okay, now I'll continue my discussion. This is another claim, and it's the D in your package. It's a claim related to the community funeral home that'll start on page 31. I would like to point out on page 31 on the background, this also is something that happened many, many years ago. On March 17th, 1999 is when this activity initially we seized the funeral home. What happened on this particular one, it was awarded the contracts that we did seize to another funeral home who had the records, and a consumer came forward to indicate, though, the balance that we seized was inaccurate, and she was able to demonstrate additional payments that were made that we need to fund the contract up to the full payment amount. And what on page 31, that shows the claim amount that we're going to seek in shortly. I believe the difference is $1,138. Behind it on 32 is additional support of payments and how much. And I'll point out at the end where it has an asterisk, it shows you the contract total was $3,138. Receipts reflect a balance due, though, of $100. The total amount paid by the purchaser then was $3,038 as of May 5th, 1999. However, we did have $1,900 on deposit that she received the funeral home under the contract. So the difference was $1,138 of restitution that was needed. Page 33 is another sample letter from our administrator, Becky, related to this claim. And again, on page 34, we'll show you the documentation from the comptroller of the check amount for $1,138. Behind it on 35, we have additional information from the funeral home, Williams Funeral Home, seeking assistance to get the restitution. Page 36 is the actual contract that Community Funeral Home wrote, again showing the terms and conditions. That was back in May of 1997 when the community did have a funeral home, I mean, a prepaid funeral permit. 37 is just additional backup from the funeral home about prepaid contracts related to these individuals and payment terms. And page 38 will also show about $1,138. Again, this is provided from the funeral home to support the additional restitution that was needed. And last, page 39, you will see some copies of receipts, and the one right toward the bottom is when the pre-need receipt will indicate a $100 balance due. Therefore, that is all I have on that. Does anyone have additional information on the funeral home seizure or any questions on this particular claim related to the community funeral home?
No.
Okay. Thanks, Russell. Do I hear a motion to ratify a claim related to community funeral home Jacksonville, Texas, as presented by Russell Reese?
I so move.
Okay. We've got a bit of motion. Is there a second? Motion by Wallace. Is there a second?
I second it.
Okay. Second by Rebecca. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Like sign. Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Then we're going to go to a discussion and possible vote to reapprove administrative memorandum 2016. Jesse?
Yes. Hi. Jesse again. So on pages 40 through 57 is the items I'm going to be talking about. Pages 40 through 48 is the red line version, and 49 through 57 is the draft, final draft version of the proposed administrative memorandum. I just remind the council that while we're not subject to the requirements of the Public Funds Investment Act, we do try to closely mirror it as much as we can. Also, the policy does require it, require for us to review it annually, and also, you know, if there's any proposed changes at the time, presented at that time. So that is why we're doing this annual review, and we're also doing the updating the date. So that's the reason why we're doing all this. You know, we've looked.
Can I open up a discussion on this topic?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. I've been corresponding with Jesse. I look back on here, and I actually was on approving this agenda in last year, I think it was. I just have a couple questions, and I'm usually there raising my hand because I'm not real savvy with all the wording in these things. If you'll just be patient with me.
Sure.
On page 42, it looks like where it says that lists the state of Israel as an authorized investment.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like all the other authorized investments listed are federal or state regulated financial institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know we were doing anything outside of this country, and I just thought that, I don't know. So I was curious as to why the state of Israel is listed, and why being the only authorized investment allowed that is not native to the U.S.
Okay.
And it just seems unfair and discriminatory because other international investment institutions may meet the standard as well or better than the state of Israel. Does that make sense?
Yes, so Rebecca, what we're doing here is, I think the reason why this was added is because it's part of the Public Investments Act. So it's in there, and what we're trying to do is mirror that policy. Now, this is, the council is, this is, you know, if you propose any changes, this is the policy that you guys have oversight over, but that is the reason why that's in there, because of the Public Funds Investment Act.
To clarify for that, this is not something we partake, this is a state mandate that we try to follow, Rebecca. We didn't come up with these parameters within this memorandum,
right,
that you could invest in Israel and not Israel. We're just following the guidelines of the state related to that directive.
Oh, Okay. Like I said, I don't know why the state of Israel is being pointed out to follow the state mandate. I don't understand how that works. That's why I was asking it. So would it be reasonable to suggest that we amend the administrative memorandum to strike out that asking too much, or bonds issued, assumed, or guaranteed by the state of Israel? Can that be striked out? Is that necessary to have that there?
Let me make an attempt to talk about that. So I don't know how long this has been there.
I don't recall either.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it has, yes.
And as Jesse said, it is what it's a state policy.
Okay.
I do recall something, I think I recall. To answer your question whether we could strike it, I guess we could.
The state policy, you're meaning our state?
Our policy, not the state policy.
Okay.
But I recall some bills that basically say that you should not discriminate against the state of Israel. So
right.
I'm not sure if that creates a problem, an issue. I'm not smart enough to figure that out.
I know, I'm not either. And that's why I'm just curious as to why. I mean, I don't want to sound anti-Semitic here by any means. I'm wondering why the state of Israel is pointed out.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you why I think it was for years. And again, I don't remember how long it started, but it was an attempt to show support.
And so instead of
saying, it doesn't say you have to do it. It says you can do it. And of course we don't do it, I guess.
We've never done it.
So, our legislature came up with this years ago.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel, is it mandated that it's in there, or is that something you're saying that we have to have that in there?
Rebecca, this is Russell. I'm just trying to clarify. Yeah, since this was not our per se document that we created, I would feel more comfortable. Maybe we could defer it to legal if they want to look at it, and we can get back with you later on. But
can
I would
we
be
do
very
that
hesitant
before it's voted on, or is that possible? I'm curious. I would really like to know more about that. I don't want to cause a problem.
But Rebecca, unfortunately, we're not in a position to address that. Like I said, that is the legislature's who has it. We could try to find that answer. Right.
And provide that information to you.
Why couldn't it be approved? And if it can't be changed at a later date, we'll do it the next year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, say that again, Wallace.
That we go ahead and approve the document as is. I mean, it's something the state of Texas, we just mirrored what they use. And if there's no legal reason to have that in there, if we choose to, next year when we vote on this again, we can make a decision whether we want to eliminate it or keep it. And depending on what legal says.
Is that okay with you?
Right.
Okay. Well, then let's go on that. Sure. Of course.
Yeah, it just, I don't know, it just seemed, it stood out to me. I am not savvy like most of you about these things, so I didn't know why that had to be, have anything to do with the prepaid funeral and DOB. I don't know, but I'm not in charge of the investment, so. Anyway, that was my question.
That's a valid question. Okay. It does stick out, but I also think that's why it's there, because it was intended to stick out. But if we can vote on it that way, we will get some information and provide it. I think we ought to try to provide that information as soon as we can, so it'll be a fresh memory.
Okay.
Okay.
And there's one more thing.
Yes, ma'am.
I apologize. Bear with me. On page 44, where it talks unauthorized investments, who can be, where does it say? Oh, yeah, the following are not authorized investments under this policy. And I think, Jesse, did you say that it was 2016 when this memorandum was made?
No. No, no, that's the number of the administrator memorandum, 2016. This, I don't know exactly, it's been around for many, many years, Rebecca. I just don't remember.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this is not the original, the 2016.
No. This is administrative memorandum number 2016, but not when it was first created, I guess, or developed.
Oh, okay. That's what I was asking from you, the original one. But so here's what I'm saying, asking as well. So underneath the unauthorized investments, it appears to be dated. What I mean by that is I suggest that the administrative memorandum be amended by striking those out, unauthorized investments, and replacing them with investments shall not be made in companies doing business or engaging in business listed in the U.S. Department of the Treasury sanctions programs and country information. And I've got a link to the U.S. Treasury's website with this information. I can also email it to the Department of Banking if you would like that list, because it's more current.
So remember, we do follow the Texas legislature. It sounds like you're talking about the U.S., maybe some other sort of sanctions or something. But can you repeat what section you're trying to revise? Because I'm not sure I was following you.
It's under.
It's on page 42, and there you have the three. I'm specifically talking about the last three. It has investments in companies doing business in Sudan.
Oh.
The next one would be Iran. And then the last one is foreign terrorist organizations.
Okay.
And I'm just saying that I'm asking, can that not be updated to include just those three or two and any foreign terrorist organizations? I guess just to be more specific, is that asking too much, or you don't go by the same
program? Rebecca, this is Russell. The stickler here is this is used across Texas, other agencies and such. Not say we can't look at it like we already committed to looking at the other question, but generally we try to follow it pretty verbatim. We don't go into changing that type of specifics because it's also used with other agencies and such, and we normally just mirror this particular mandate from the state. I guess we can have legal look at again to see if we can modify the end of that part to see the necessity and if we can look at it. But we will, I guess, at the same thing, get our attorneys to look at that.
Okay, so it's just what I'm trying to understand is that it's not, I'm asking for it to be too detailed. Is that kind of what you mean?
No, what I'm saying is we didn't create all this specific detail. It has already been created
right
by some other governmental agency that we are just following. And we haven't really previously tried to delete, modify too much, so we're all using the same Public Fund Investment Act. Since it's an act, that's what the quandary is, but we could look to see what we have authority to modify and if it's warranted or not.
Hey, Rebecca, this is Jesse. This is Jesse. One thing I was going to tell you, also inform the council here towards the end, but this might be a good time, is that we also track bills, you know, during this legislature to see if there's anything that would impact the investment policy. And right now, there aren't any that would impact the advisory council. But so most of this has actually been approved by our legislature years ago, and that's where the language comes from the Public Investments Act. So that is what we're mirroring. So I just wanted to point that out, that, you know, like Russell said, it's something that we follow that act and the language and the provisions in that act.
Well, and that's why I think, that's why, Jesse, I was trying to find out exactly when this particular memorandum was actually created. Because, you know, there's room for updating, I think, on these things.
So, Rebecca, make sure I follow what you're saying. So you're saying possibly that the bullet points are outdated. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And like I said, I'm not an expert.
And you were referring earlier to something that you picked up that's in the U.S. code or something?
Yeah, we were able to find a U.S. Treasury website, and it has the treasury.gov under Resource Center Sanctions Program page.
Right.
And it has a list of active sanctions.
Right.
And it has different countries and, right. And
but,
things
I mean,
like that.
Let me make this a possible suggestion, or not suggestion, but thought. The way that last bullet point is listed on under unauthorized investments, it is a kind of a catch-all, investment in companies that engage in business with a foreign terrorist organization.
Yes, sir.
An example, I think they added a couple of countries to that list this week. And so if we did specific listing, then it would be outdated probably the day it was put together. So this,
that's true.
This basically says to us or to anybody trying to follow this that you would, at the point you're trying to make an investment, you would go to that list and make sure that the company, the business that you're trying to invest in is not sanctioned. It's really,
to
me, it's a catch-all. And if if you tried to list every one of them, you there'll be some that probably go on and some that probably go off. So that's kind of
I understand. So it may be a reference to and just adding the wording investment in companies that engage in business with a foreign terrorist organization. Perhaps we could list the under the U.S. Treasury's guidelines. I don't know. Maybe that's asking too much.
Well, again,
be more specific that way. I mean, you wouldn't have to list all of them, but it would give more of a reference.
You know, I'm not saying what you're saying is wrong at all, because it does bring up some questions. Let me see how we can do this. Basically, what you're trying to do is suggest that we be more specific.
Yes, sir.
Well, you're saying just to refer to the U.S. policy. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that maybe, like Russell was saying, maybe just discuss it with the legal department. I'm no expert in this. I'm just, these are things that stood out to me that I wanted to bring up in discussion.
So we can do that, obviously. The question is, if we don't approve this one now, do we approve this? Here's a question. So do we approve this and then circle back around with the specifics on your question? Is that what you're suggesting?
Or I don't know if that's the best route to take. I mean, I'm open for you counseling me on that. I don't know.
So
if that's something that's possible.
If we don't modify it, Jesse, we go with it.
We will have to have another
special meeting
or something to
reapprove.
I'm suggesting
that we would, if it's not modified, we fall under the old investment policy, correct?
Right.
But that hasn't changed, that part.
And I understand.
Yeah, that's correct. We would just be updating the dates to say, you know, we looked at it this year, I mean, this at this time.
Okay,
correct?
I understand that. But Rebecca's asking, she wants clarity on this one item, which means that she may not be comfortable voting on it.
We will fall back to what's already approved last year.
All right.
Yes.
But it's dated.
Right, correct.
Is there a problem? I don't know if that's a problem.
But Jesse, what was the limited changes that we were making?
The changes, we're just moving the date.
That's all we're doing.
That was it. It was just the date. See, this one didn't have any changes related to it. Okay.
So we'd be operating under one approved November 2017.
Which is the same as this.
Which is the same as this.
Correct. So we'll still be operating under the same
right. I guess the question
memorandum,
is...
I don't have a problem with approving what we have before us, with the ability, if we find we can make changes, then we can change it.
When's the next meeting?
I agree.
Probably a year. If we don't have a claim per se, we would have to, we tentatively have it 6 months from now. But if there's not a claim, there's no necessity to have a meeting. If we want to schedule it specifically for this, discuss that part, we can do that and do it by phone. But right now, I was talking about it later on at the meeting, a tentative date would be a year from now. If we, there's no point in meeting, we won't have a meeting until then.
I'm thinking.
Well, I apologize for throwing in something like this, but I just thought I would try.
No need to apologize, and you shouldn't apologize. You're doing what you think's right.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, exactly. If we don't approve it, it stays the way it is. And the way it is the way we were going to approve it, subject to an updating the date. And so we would be operating in an outdated policy?
Correct. And the other consideration is, if you approve it with just the date and it comes back that we can make revisions, we could then have a special meeting to talk, to readopt this again with that specific changes if necessary.
Okay.
I think that would be reasonable. Okay. We would be waiting to hear back from the legal department about these two things, and then it can be changed, updated.
Rebecca, what I was proposing is, I think as Wallace indicated earlier, the only change to this one is the date. However, we will assign this to an attorney to look at your particular questions. And if it becomes that we can make those changes, we could have a special meeting after that just to discuss that change alone and propose it at that time, and you can then vote to readopt those changes.
That sounds reasonable to me.
Okay, so Russell, I'm going to restate what you just said. So the idea would be to go ahead, if the council agrees to adopt this, with the understanding that we're going to do some research on this item as the other item. We will report that back out to the members, and then after we decide that we need to have another special meeting, we will. Okay. All right. So with that understanding, then, is there a motion? Let me get back to where I was. Is there a motion to reapprove Administrative Memorandum 2016 as presented by Jesse, with the understanding that we will be doing some research?
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll second that.
All right, second by Rebecca. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Like sign. Okay, the ayes have it. Motion carries. And thank you for your comments on that. They are thought-provoking, I'll say that.
Thank you so much for listening to me.
I'm interested in finding out the answers, too, so that's good. Okay, so let's go to page 3, discussion of collection efforts, Jesse.
Right, so I'm going to go over agenda item F, and it's basically just a summary of our the department's collection activities as far as collecting restitution from funeral homes or individuals that sold any illegal preneed contracts. Page 58 through 61 provides that recap. These are all pretty much the same individuals that we've been that have been presented before. Kevin Kinney on page 58 on the top, he still is paying restitution, and as per the order. Page 59, no normal activity there, and on page 60, The only thing I'll maybe highlight is that Tim Gaffney, which I talked about earlier in the recap of the activity, has actually paid all his restitution. So now, you know, he's paying the fines associated with that order. On page 61, another quick recap of Austin Peel and Son, where he went ahead and paid the restitution and penalty for selling illegal contracts. And Russell is going to provide that a little recap further, but for the most part, you know, we were notified, or we became aware of consumer of him selling illegal preenie contracts to consumers. We did our investigation. We then subsequently issued an emergency order to seize the records. We seized the records, and after doing a reconciliation of the activity, we determined that there was a restitution due of $524,780.38. We went ahead and did we issued a consent order, number 218-032, and as part of the consent order, he was also required to pay a $250,000 penalty to the department. On February 28th of 2019, he went ahead and paid those amounts to the department. And like I mentioned earlier, we are in the process of, we have already started issuing restitution to consumers, and we're still finalizing that activity. But that is good news. I mean, that's something we were able to collect restitution from consumers here in Austin, Texas. So it's a funeral home here in Austin, Texas. So we were able to take care of that.
Well, this is Russell. You pretty much hit on almost everything related to that, but I'll just give one little additional caveat for you. First, Austin did not have a license to sell prepaid, so it would never be brought, even if we weren't able to get restitution from the guarantee fund, because he did not have a license permit when he sold them. And two, just for your benefit dollar-wise, $525,000 or so restitution, we also paid out about a half of that. It's kind of mind-boggling about the other half that we're still working on. They haven't come forward. And so what will happen there, that money will be sent to the comptroller in their name in case they ever come forward years from now to be on deposit. But that was probably the best scenario workout I've seen in the last 15 years. Mr. Peel ultimately sold his funeral home to pay back the restitution and the penalties. So he's no longer in the funeral business. He sold the funeral home, and consumers were very fortunate on this one.
So, Russell, did you just refund the money back to those people, and then they would go and purchase another prepaid funeral?
Correct.
Since else, or they could do whatever they wanted?
They could. That is pretty much correct. They could do whatever they want. I believe some of them were contacting the new funeral home owner who bought it to secure prepaid funeral contracts. But it's pretty much, here's your money. Do with, you know, if you want to buy another prepaid or not, it was their option. We just had to refund the funds at that time.
Yeah, Amy, just real quick, those contracts were, I mean, they were not even contracts. They were, you know, sometimes just notations on there and so forth. That's why it really wasn't.
Not a thought, yeah.
Right. It was really hard to figure out what exactly was purchased at the time. Sure. So it's made easier just to refund the money and let the consumer try to,
sure,
you know, make a decision after that. But yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
It's a pretty quick turnaround.
Yes, it was. It was a good.
It was a good result. I'll be honest, there was a lot of days it didn't look like this was going to materialize, but he finally, you know, he worked with him for a while, and you may or may not have heard that the news was very involved with this here locally, and we were just very fortunate. Although it might seem a quick turnaround, it took months to finally come to fruition.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay,
yeah,
well.
It did work.
Yeah. That concludes my discussion of item, was it F, I guess? If anybody has any questions, let me know.
Okay. Then, we have your certificate in here for
right.
Attendance of the public fund.
Training
that you didn't find out about the state of Israel.
I need to ask that question.
Get an update on that. Okay, then Future meeting, you know, future meeting dates.
Tentatively, again, as we always, we're gonna put a date out there, and right now we'll put a year. I'm just pencil your calendars for May 14th, 2020. However, as always, if there's something that comes up, something that we have to have a meeting, we will reach out to y'all and give y'all plenty of time. But I will cross our fingers that we don't have to have a meeting prior to that. But it also, we might have one sooner depending on the results of the Public Investment Act. I'm related to more of the claims aspect, and if we don't have any that requires it, it will be a year, and or we'll maybe have it in 6 months if we have claims that we don't know.
Okay.
Oh, and there's one last thing. I'll move on since I got the next conclusion. I will give you a couple quick updates on recent events or what's happening here. And one, I'm hoping it won't impact too quickly the prepaid funeral guarantee fund. We recently, and I think, Jesse, you sent them the press release on this one, the Hernandez Funeral Home.
Right.
Hernandez Funeral Home actually did have a prepaid funeral permit. We recently had an exam performed, and it came out that it looked like consumers' prepaid funeral contracts were being canceled without their knowledge, and refund checks that were being purported sent to them didn't get to the individual. During the exam, we were able to see approximately three, but we did determine one for sure. Therefore, we had issued on April 30th, again, and you have that press release, an emergency cease and desist and a seizure order. We have multiple boxes. We're going through them as we speak. We're hoping we don't have too many of those, but generally, my experience, you have a few, there's generally more. We will be reaching out to all the consumers to verify that. The trust-funded permit had approximately 81 contracts at the time of seizure. And the three cancellations, they were all under $6,500. The one specifically has confirmed it was like $1,800 prepaid funeral contract. But we'll go through all those contracts, all the records, the bank records to see, and then we'll be notifying all the consumers of the 81 of what action we took. It was in the paper. But ironically, we have not had any consumers come forward, which we normally do. So they may or may not later on, and we'll keep you advised. And this is a potential if we do find contracts that were stolen and the funds aren't there, and they're over $6,500, we then would need a meeting quicker, depending on that.
Russell?
Uh-huh.
It's Rebecca. Can I ask a question?
Yes, Rebecca.
You said there's 81...
Yeah, 80 outstanding. That's correct.
Yes, and then it's you, and who else is going to be trying to get hold of these folks?
No, we have protocol and we have policies in place that when we seize per the statutes and rules, we go through, first and foremost, we figure out the records, who we have. Then we're required to notify all consumers of what the balance we have when we seized it. Then they verify that information based on the records we have, and they get back with us so we can ascertain the correct dollar amount. But we're not quite there yet because we got to go through the records, but then that's the next step. Then after that, what's that?
Sorry.
I'm sorry?
Sorry.
No, okay, no.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, okay, but after that process and we determine that, then we're required, if necessary, to have a guarantee fund if there's big shortages. Then we would then ultimately hopefully find a successor funeral home to honor those contracts would be our last step.
Yeah. So the first, the only way really that people know this is through a press release. Everybody gets those.
Rebecca, no, I'm sorry, let me clarify. We are going to notify every one of them as far as our records.
I know.
But right now is the only press release, but we have to... We just did this a few days ago, so we have to have time to go through it. But every consumer will be notified in writing of the balance we have for them, and then they have an opportunity to yes or no, because we do this all the time when this happens. The consumer says, no, I paid X amount. Then they give us a receipt, and we adjust that balance.
Yes, that's a lot of hard work.
Yes, my administrators do a lot of work. I'm just kidding. It is a lot of work. It is, but it's necessary.
Is.
It's necessary to be done.
if they were canceling contracts and then the purchaser was not getting the check back, then he could be doing other illegal things. He's endorsing something.
Wallace, what happened was the individual was forging signatures.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's...
And the notary, too?
We suspect so, yes, Amy.
Yeah.
And that's part of the... We're also going to be sending letters to the individuals that supposedly canceled those contracts to. So we're going to be sending just kind of confirming, by the way, we have a record that you canceled your contract, and hopefully we'll find out if some of those were or were not canceled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be going through the records as well. So, yes. Yeah.
Okay, anything else on that, Russell?
No, sir. I just wanted to kind of, since that's kind of a recent event and that is an actual permit holder of ours, it could have ramifications to the council if we find out shortages.
Okay. All right. So we want to talk about the update on the term limits.
Yes, sir. Jesse here. Just kind of wanted to put it on the radar for Rebecca and Amy that your terms are... set to expire on the end of this year, December 31st. But luckily, you are able to reapply, or you know, if you would like to serve again. And I will just kind of again, we don't need an answer right now. This is just kind of a heads up. And I will be contacting you probably in October or so, because we
September, October, somewhere around there. We have to, if you agree to it.
Put in
the finance commission has to vote to approve y'all again. So no later in December. So I would hope maybe late summer we'll reach out to see if you're interested or not still.
Right. So just kind of again.
Well, it's been an honor for me. I'm learning so much, and like I say all the time, I really appreciate all the patience that you guys extend to me. Really, it's a learning process.
we appreciate the time y'all spend on this. It's,
right.
Really is a good service to the state. Okay, so anyway, so Russell will be.
We did vote for the memorandum, didn't we? Took a vote for that?
Yes.
The agenda?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But we'll be getting some information out after a little research. Okay, before I close the meeting, anything that anybody would like to talk about besides the weather?
No.
Oh, I'm good.
Okay, well, again, listen, thank you all for spending the time. And so there being no further business, this meeting of the Prepaid Funeral Guarantee Fund Advisory Council is now adjourned. The time is 1:58 p.m. Thank y'all so much. Hope you get the food.